All right. Good evening, everyone. Corey, if you recall from last week, Corey is going to be a little late. He's hoping to be home maybe 9:30 or so. He's shooting a freelance project. But in the meantime, we're joined tonight by John Linneman, who you might recognize from Digital Foundry. Digital Foundry is a site hosted on Eurogamer. Corey actually informed me. I didn't realize this. Digital Foundry is kind of independent of Eurogamer. Is that correct?
Well, we're kind of, you know, partners with it. It's an interesting thing. But yeah, you know, that's kind of where all of our content lives. And although we've become kind of really focused on YouTube these days. So.
Really? Yeah. So, I mean, I've been reading Digital Foundry for years, and not so much because, you know, I've seen some people look at Digital Foundry and be like, you know, I don't understand the point of this side. You know, this is just, you know, flaming console wars and stuff like that. And you know, and to me, like, it's never had anything to do with that, because it's you guys, you know, you mostly look at modern games, but it's this in-depth look at, you know, the technical achievements the developers have done to make their games work the way they do.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very interested in this stuff, and, you know, I try to make it interesting and fun to watch as much as possible, at least.
Yeah, I mean, and, so, you know, I didn't even own, like, someday in the future, I'm going to get a machine that plays Xbox One games. I'm waiting at this point, you know, for the Scorpio to come out. I actually didn't own an Xbox 360 until earlier this year. So, you know, I never really had, you know, when I was reading Digital Foundry, there was never like a question of which version am I going to get, because, you know, on the off occasion, I sometimes got like the PC version, but I'm, you know, a weirdo who, you know, for whatever irrational reason, consoles make me feel warm and fuzzy inside. So, you know, it was almost always, I'm going to get the PS3 version, but I was still curious about reading, like, how did the developers bring this game to the PS3? How did they utilize their resources to make this game as comparable as possible to other versions?
And, you know, that's kind of become my real thing in the last year or so, is really I try to push for presenting interesting stories about how the games are made, and mm-hmm. more, like, specifically show off the impressive techniques that are in the games, you know, really help people appreciate what they're doing.
Right, like, you know, I was looking at your DF Retro. I don't think I explained this yet. John also does a sub-series on Digital Foundry. You know, you can count on Digital Foundry to be looking at almost every modern multi-platform release, in addition to just looking at some of the technical achievements that were performed for system exclusives, just looking at how that hardware was really pushed. I mean, you know, you've done things on like Uncharted 4, for example. I mean, there's no comparison to make there, but you're just kind of showing, you know, this is what Naughty Dog achieved on the PlayStation 4. But you do this sub-series that's been pretty successful called DF Retro, and you're looking at how developers utilized you know, the hardware limitations that they had at the time. And I think
exactly.
I just think limitations are so interesting, because a good-looking game is always going to look good, in my opinion, if its hardware was used well.
Exactly. I think so. I agree. It's that marriage of art and technology together, really nailing it. The kind of thing you see in, like, Metroid Prime or that kind of game, where it's just perfectly done. It holds up anytime you look at it.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the last time I played Metroid Prime, you know, it was years before I even really thought that deeply about, like, 60 frames per second and stuff like that. And it didn't even occur to me until I watched your video. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, that game looks that good, and it does run at 60 frames per second. Like, that's kind of insane. Absolutely. If you think about awesome. It. It's like, it's just an unyielding hold to that frame rate.
Exactly. That's the key. And it's weird that a lot of games from that generation were the ones that really nailed that.
Yeah,
it is. As opposed to like the PS3 360 era, especially, was mm-hmm. kind of rough.
Yeah,
for frame rate.
And it's interesting to see, you know, Nintendo, you know, they're kind of known in the Wii U generation. They're known for this super strict adherence in almost all of their games, save for like Breath of the Wild, to this
sure, yeah.
perfect, unyielding 60 frames per second in almost every first party game they do. And it's interesting to look back to Metroid Prime and it's like, wow, they did that back on the GameCube. Like, that is a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, really impressive stuff. Nintendo's always pushed that, which is why I think when it comes to like the Switch, for instance, it's like, you know, even if the hardware is relatively underpowered, it should still be quite they should be capable of putting out a very smooth product.
Right.
Plenty of 60 frames per second games.
Nintendo just has this art style that they really kind of developed, I would say, sort of mid to late GameCube generation, where things like just have almost this roundness to them. I mean, their art style is just kind of really timeless, regardless of you know, the hardware that it runs on. You know, even stuff on the Wii and all that. I mean, it's just it's the style that just it works no matter. And I think the Dolphin, which I haven't dabbled in probably as much as you have, but I mean, the fact that those games hold up so well, you know, in 1080p 4K emulated on a, you know, that just goes to show the Nintendo's art style. Like, I want to say, like, kind of early in the GameCube generation, Nintendo's first party games were not really necessarily considered to have the best graphics. Like, you think back to something like Mario Kart Double Dash, obviously a well optimized games, but like the characters just kind of look a little blobby.
So Luigi's Mansion though was pretty slick.
Yeah.
They did the whole real time shadows everywhere and, you know, some very nice lighting. And,
yeah,
you know, it was a good, handsome game.
Yeah, I remember reading about bump mapping, you know, in back in the early 2000s, and it was something that I'd never really seen in person. And I remember in the basement in Luigi's Mansion, I got GameCube on launch day. And I remember going to the basement in Luigi's Mansion, and, you know, there's this part on the wall where, like, when your light, you know, passes by it, I could see, like, the shadow on the brick shift from one side to the other. I'm like, whoa! And I just, like, went up those stairs, like, a million times, being like, I can't believe that the light is changing the perspective on the texture. But, and I think that's where you guys at Digital Foundry know so much more than we do. Like, we always like to say we're not the real experts. We just talk to the people who are the real experts and decode the information.
Well, the real experts are the guys actually making the games.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But still, you guys, you know, when I read a Digital Foundry article and, you know, I'm reading stuff like, you know, well, whenever alpha effects come up and, you know, bog down the PS3 version, it's like, I have the vaguest handle on what an alpha effect really is. And, you know, you guys talk about, like, well, you know, we don't expect that, you know, like before PS4 Pro came out, you're like, well, we don't expect that it's going to be able to do this, this, and this, because this is the, you know, this is the kind of hardware that is limited to what Sony has access to purchase right now. And it's going to have, you know, double GPU. So these are the results that you can expect to get, because you guys have this great understanding of how those effects are, you know, really funneled through the system and what kind of result you can expect to get out of specific hardware. And to me, it's still half magic to me. So, but, you know, even when I don't understand it, even when I'm not like debating like which version of the game should I buy, it's very enlightening just to see, like, this is, you know, this is what the developers did to make a game within limitations. And, you know, I think limitations brings out the best work.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, you
total
think
agreement there. I mean, People always say, like, hey, you know, when are we going to have a system where everything is 60 frames per second? Mm-hmm. And it's always like, that's never going to happen. 60 frames per second is a design choice, right?
Right. And you know, in something like Shadow of the Colossus here, I remember they said when they were working on the HD version, they said, you know, even if we could do 60 frames, the game doesn't need that. You know, that for a game that is a very conscious choice.
Especially, I saw when I was did that eco video, uncovering in the debug menu, the whole ability to unlock the frame rate in that game.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, they really were targeting potentially a higher frame rate and opted instead. I mean, maybe they couldn't actually get the target of hitting it the whole time, but, you know, I thought that was interesting that it was actually in there.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, obviously, in retrospect, this was a poor way to design games, but you look at something like Super Mario Sunshine or Final Fantasy X, and 30 frames per second is baked into those games. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know,
although, you know,
from what I understand,
it's a funny thing with Sunshine, remember, when they first showed that, I think it was at some TGS or something like that, it was originally shown running at 60 frames per second.
Really?
Yeah, like very early footage.
Okay, I did not know that. Yeah, that's interesting.
The final game obviously went to 30, and you know, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
I think they were really pushing for the water and the paint effects and all that, and those different texture layers.
It's
quite stressful.
You know, I think a lot of people would give me crap for this viewpoint, but you know, when it comes to like modern 3D games, I would take good motion blur and good anti-aliasing. If I had to sacrifice 60 frames to get that, I personally would.
And you know, that's exactly right. It's one of those things where there's a preference there, right? Like everybody has different preferences on what they want, and there's no right answer there.
Right, and so. I think a lot of people think that 60 frames should just, it has to be, game is better with 60 frames. It's like, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily mind, like, personally, I don't really feel necessarily that difference in responsiveness between 60 and 30, especially if it's a consistent 30. It just, you know, it feels good. But like, I mean, for a retro game, you know, I absolutely understand, you know, you've got that fast motion and, you know, it's obviously moving fast because everything's moving for the most part in the horizontal axis. But you know, when you have that like good motion blur, like Uncharted, you know, I think is a great example of that. You know, it blends together, and to my eye, the frames so well. I think maybe that just comes from being a video person. You know, I'm used to seeing motion blur in video. Yeah, I like to see in the game; blur, it makes it feel more tangible to me.
I can see that. I mean, I of course love high frame rates, but at 60 frames a second with that nice motion blur is especially nice. But 30 frames a second with really good motion blur still can look awesome.
Yeah. So yeah. So I mean, I am pro 30 frames per second. Don't get me wrong. I love 60 frames a second too. But it's you know, sacrifices have to be made in game development, and I think for most games that the standard 30 frames per second target is the right choice, I think, for most games. But you know, 60 when it happens is awesome, and I absolutely applaud developers that have that strict adherence to it. Yeah, yeah. So speaking of 60 frames per second, I'm sure we're not getting that out of this stream because
no, it seems to be lagging pretty bad.
Yeah, I reduced the bit rate last week. From what I normally stream at, because it was lagging so bad. Corey normally streams because his internet just handles it better, and I usually have a pretty bad bitrate. And also, I notice here that the camera inversion is the same as the original version back in the era when inversion was the thing.
Both axes as well.
Yeah, usually. Yeah. See, I was a huge proponent of inverted horizontal. I mean, vertical and horizontal, but It drove me crazy when, you know, last generation we started getting these games that were, you know, defaulting to non-inverted horizontal. And I, you know, as a video guy, I'm used to I'm used to tripods. And, you know, you think about, you push a tripod handle left to pan right, you push it right to pan left, and so it always just made sense to me. And I was so annoyed, you know, starting last generation to play games, you know, especially like third person shooters, because like when I was not shooting, okay, how do I get on the horse? It says triangle, but he's not triangle. Getting on the horse. Triangle, it's been so long. I've not played the PS3 version of this. Actually, is it?
No, is it interesting things about the PS3 version? That's, it should be triangle.
I think is triangle control the horse. I think I change jump to X. Let's see what.
Right.
Which button moves the horse forward? Is it? Okay.
I think it's circle. If on that scheme, yeah, because they. You're right. When you change the button configuration, it doesn't change the prompts.
Yeah. So. Here we go. Okay. Triangle still makes the horse move forward, though.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. But see, I'm running around here, and you know, you can really see that high quality motion blur on the grass here. Like, you probably can't really see it on the stream that well, unfortunately. But
no, and that was not in the PS2 version. Not like that. They added that nice pixel motion blur to the PS3 version. I think it looks great.
Yeah, and I feel like Shadow of the Colossus might have been one of the first games I played that really had like a strong motion blur effect. There was, to some extent, an effect in the original version.
Well, they did a velocity-based approximation of it, sort of accumulation blur. Mm-hmm. But and you're right, I guess for the time, the only other game before that I can remember with pretty good motion blur was the original Trackmania Sunrise from 2005.
Which I've never played.
And that was one of the first times I saw that pixel motion blur in action, and it was mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I feel like, honestly, I feel like Shadow of the Colossus may have, like, set, in a lot of ways for me, like, some things that I like in the visual makeup of a game, because I love motion blur. You know, I like high frame rate, but I'm not super picky on it, which is, you know, why some people can't stand this game. and I think the frame rate is a large part of that, but it was like, man, it just blew me away. And also, I think this kind of bleeds into my video work. And I tried to restrain myself when it comes to this, but I really liked like the overexposed look of this game.
Yeah, me too.
And I feel like I conventional wisdom is let's see, which button holds up your sword to show you where to go?
Maybe square in that config.
No buttons doing
circle?
Anything? No, I don't think so. Hold on, I accidentally jumped off the horse. But, I mean, this game...
I see a question here from Potbelly Punch asking if 2D games on PlayStation 1 or older systems ever ran at 30 frames per second, or was it always 60? And I can say that there were definitely games on those systems and older that did run at 30 frames per second. Yeah. Like, I know on the Sega Genesis, for instance, Shokin the Forever Man, that's a 30 frames a second game. There was a bunch of games like that you could find that actually did run at lower frame rates.
Mm-hmm. Well, say Drill Dozer on the Game Boy Advance, I think, is 30 frames.
Drill Dozer, that's definitely 30 frames.
Yeah, it's, but which is, I would say, unusual for a platformer, but like it doesn't bother me in that game.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's interesting how that goes, though. But most 2D games did target 60.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously when you got to early 3D systems, they... I don't know if they were necessarily locked or not, but they... you know, if they were, like, capped at 30 or not, but, you know, there was... some pretty loose adherence, especially on N64.
Hold on a second. Okay. There we go. Sorry about that little interruption. Well, right. Yes. So where were we here?
30 frames a second, older games.
Oh, yes, yes. Many, many titles back then were actually capped, but sometimes they just kind of let it run wild, but since it was a double buffer kind of setup, you'd end up with, you know, if it could spike to 60. That's actually the case here in this, in the original version. If you go to certain areas, you actually get pockets where it runs at 60 frames.
Really?
Yeah.
I never would guess that the game wasn't capped at 30.
Of course. No, it was not. So, primarily you could see it in the, if you let the introductory flyover occur.
Okay, yeah, I always did think that looked smooth. Where it would
show less on-screen action, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It would actually pop up to that fairly often.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't...
I think they capped it on this version.
Yeah, they must have. Now, I'm looking at these birds flying here, and there's, like, some pretty framey motion on them.
Yeah.
Obviously, sure. You know, that's just a pre-canned, sprite animation. Or maybe it's not a sprite animation. I don't know. Actually, it doesn't look like it is. But, I unfortunately don't have the PS2 version of this anymore. I wish I did, you know, just for... I'll probably pick it up again sometime, because I went
through... Well, look at it. At this way, we're at least sharing with the audience the PS2 experience with the apparent leg of the screen. You're playing the HD version, but for everybody else watching, it feels like you're actually experiencing the original PS2 game.
Exactly.
So that's key.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should switch to Corey when he shows up. But I stream to Twitch for our backloggery streams, and I don't know why. Like, YouTube works great for Corey,
And it's not great on you.
It's not great for me. And like I pay extra money for higher upload speeds, and I don't know. Apparently, I don't get what my deal is with YouTube. But sometimes I have good streams, and usually you can kind of predict, kind of expect mine to not be that amazing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm trying to watch the video along here, and it is pretty laggy. Yeah. But hey, somebody asked here if I'm ever going to do a DF Retro episode on Star Fox on Super NES.
Yeah.
That's a good probability at some point. Maybe look at the Super FX games in general. Because there's quite a few, like Doom on the SNES, the SNES.
Was that actually Super FX game. I did not know that was Super FX.
Yeah, it doesn't use the Doom engine. It's Super FX. And if you look, the ceilings and floors don't have textures.
Ah. Yeah, I've been kind of interested in picking that up sometime.
Let's see here. Can you change the server location on YouTube that you stream to?
Well, there's like a primary ingest server and a backup. I can try restarting it because it actually makes a seamless file. So let me try it. It is dropping an awful lot of frames. It shows me on OBS here. Let me try that real quick. I'll take the stream down and what difference.
Yeah, let's.
It's not showing it. I shouldn't have said anything. It wasn't showing drop frames, but then it just hit a little spike. Sometimes it hits a spike when you first start, and then it smooths out.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
I mean, it probably couldn't have been worse than it was. Also, I cannot remember at all how to climb this guy.
I think you gotta, like, take out his... sort of his calf muscle area.
Oh, he like
goes down to his knee.
That's right. He like falls down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm. You know, it was Christmas break when. What button do I press to aim? Okay, here we go. You just hold square. See, this is funny. Like because this is an old game. Like the non-inversion aiming is screwing me up. Like I want non-inversion for walking around, but when I start to go into aim mode, then like my mind f- flips into reverse. I'm the same way with like Resident Evil 4.
Oh yeah,
I'm all about these, you know, in modern games, I'm all about non-inversion aiming, but when I play a retro game, like sometimes my brain flips the other way and I'm like, see, that's all armored there.
Oh. So yeah, this was one game I picked up right when it came out. I think at the time I was living in Tokyo.
Oh,
so wow. That's how I got that Nico bonus disc, because it was a pre-order bonus. So and I played through it on a 13-inch television with composite video.
Wow.
Needless to say, that was not the best way to experience the game.
It's saying I'm dropping 72% of frames. Let me.
Wow.
Maybe I should switch back to the primary server, because I mean it wasn't great, but that was better. I might lower the bit rate even further, even though it's already ridiculously low. One moment.
Let's see.
Do you shoot him in the unarmored part of the back of his leg?
Okay, so far the stream's looking smoother to me.
Well, I lowered the bitrate to like 1100.
Definitely smoother. So what you want to, now that I can see what's going on, you want to actually climb up on his
and then hit with the sword on
calf, like climb onto it.
Oh, he's got like sword. He's got a bleeding spot on. That's right.
Yeah,
I forgot that you sometimes have to hit like a weak point.
Yeah, and then he'll kind of kneel down, and then you can climb up onto his back. Now, one thing about this HD version is that they made the climbing and sort of grappling system slightly even more difficult, since I believe it's based on the European version.
Really?
So you tend to get knocked off balance more often on the HD version.
Really? So it was already pretty common.
Yeah, so it feels a little bit more frustrating actually at points, because you're kind of getting whipped around like crazy.
Yeah, and I just ran out of stamina, so I fell. But yeah, this just like blew me away when I played it. And I think not necessarily for the same reasons that a lot of people normally were, because like I was just like I probably spent twice as much time beating the game as most people, because I was just like so distracted by all of the just like all the different paths that you could take. Like I never went straight for the next Colossus. I was always I want to see what's down this path in the woods. And there was like never, you know, yeah, sure, there's sometimes like the lizards and stuff, but there was rarely anything to like actually collect or find. It was just, you know, sights to see.
Yeah, it was just atmospheric and beautiful to explore, and it's just it had a really nice sense of scale.
Yeah, I mean, this was just one of those.
Time. It was really something.
Yeah, it's just one of those games that you beat it, and then you just like stare blankly for, you know, the next hour, and you're like, well, what do I do now?
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I was, you know, the first time I played Eco, is it Eco or Ico? It's Eco, right?
It's Eco. Yeah, it's Eco.
I'm always pretty bad at pronouncing that, but like the first time I played it, I was not that into it. I had kind of recently played Prince of Persia: Sands of Time, and I was like, man, this game like lets me do so much less than, you know, Prince of Persia. Like, you know, I was really kind of spoiled by, you know, all of the wide range of abilities that you could do in that game. And like, in retrospect, obviously, I completely missed the point of the game. You know, like exactly. That is not, you know, Eco is not about, you know, doing cool platforming moves. Like, you know, so I replayed it years later and developed more of an appreciation for it. But I definitely like Shadow of the Colossus. I'm definitely much more of a Shadow of the Colossus fan. I've not played The Last Guardian yet. Different. I'm hoping to get it for Christmas, so I'll hopefully.
Oh, you haven't played it yet? Okay.
No, yeah. I've not. No.
Well, we're not going to spoil it here, but it's. I definitely have to recommend playing on a PS4 Pro.
Yeah, well, I did get a PS4 Pro, so.
And I recommend playing it in the 1080p mode as well.
Oh, there's a because 4K. 4K.
The 4K so on a regular PS4 it drops a lot of frames. It's very choppy. On the PS4 Pro it drops some frames in the 4K mode, but then at the 1080p mode it's very, very smooth on the Pro.
Okay. Man, what am I doing wrong that I cannot like lift up? I think I'm doing my buttons wrong here. I know R1 grabs.
Yeah.
I hold X to like lunge up, right?
Just try to climb up without jumping. Just jump up those two little things there. Platform on his back.
So I just hold R1 and he automatically will climb up?
No, if you're holding R1 and you're on a fur patch, you should just be able to climb along.
I'm trying to get like up like the ledge on his leg, I think, right?
Yeah, you want to get up there first.
Hey! Wait.
Hey!
It's Corey! Maybe I'm can here. Save us.
Yeah,
I'm here to save you.
Do you want us, like, how hard would it be for us to switch over to you? Because, like, my,
lagging.
It's apparently, like, the worst lagging stream that has come from my computer. Huh? Yeah, I mean, you know it's usually pretty bad for me, but.
Yeah. Give me a second?
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay. Hang on one second. What are we playing? Do I want to play something else?
I mean, I'm like really terrible at this game at the moment. cannot remember how to control Wander right now. So,
I'll just pick something random.
Pick whatever you want.
Sure.
Okay. I need a little bit of.
Let me know when you're ready, and then I'll switch it off.
Okay, because I think that I should just be able to jump in right after you, so I guess we'll see what happens.
I don't know if it'll make a seamless fall, because you'll have like a different resolution set. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, then
we'll see what happens.
You always stream at 720p, right?
I do.
I mean, I wonder if I just can set mine.
I'm 720p 30 at 1100, and my internet still won't do it.
All right.
All right.
I'm dropping between like 50% and 70% of my frames. So
wow,
that's okay.
Didn't even try the backup server.
Yeah,
we did.
Backup server was the 70%.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me just look.
All right.
Do I got to change the broadcast settings to just the video to 720?
Say what?
For my base resolution, if I wanted to make it, 60 frames, it's gonna get screwed up anyways. What I'll do is I'll just download it tomorrow.
Okay, and stitch it together.
Okay, let me pick something else.
Okay,
I'll be right back.
All right.
There, I'll just pause it here because there's no reason. Laxter in the chat is saying if your ISP is throttling YouTube, maybe try restream.io. I didn't think of that. I have a hard time watching Corey's stream too. Actually.
Huh.
I mean, I don't.
What
really,
is your ISP, by the way?
Time Warner.
Oh, well.
I mean, of course, that's the reaction to like any ISP that's not like Google, right? You know, like, oh, yeah. That'll explain why it's bad. Like, I mean, you live where are you living presently? I mean, you live in Europe.
I live in Frankfurt, Germany.
Oh, okay.
So, I have pretty good internet there. I got 40 megabits up.
I mean, it's my understanding that Europe in general kind of has better internet.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of have fiber everywhere, so
I guess the infrastructure is a little hard here because, like, you know, in
It's so big.
It's so yeah, and like, I mean, we've got a lot of like really spread out rural areas, so. Exactly. But I wish so we could do something. I wish we could do something.
Yeah, it's different. I feel it when I come back here and use other people's internets. It's like there's a lot of it's not quite that fast.
Yeah, yeah.
My parents are also using Time Warner, which is where I'm staying at the moment. Uh-huh. And it's all right, but you know, it could be better.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you originally from? I mean, you're near where Corey is right now, near Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's right. This is where I'm originally from.
Yeah, I've
been traveling around since then for a while now.
Yeah, I actually lived. I lived in the Cincinnati area. I lived in Amelia from 91 to 94. So,
wow. Okay. So I was probably somewhere not too far playing Sega Genesis games a lot.
And I was still playing original Nintendo and Game Boy. I didn't. Didn't get yes. Super Nintendo until I left Ohio. I was kind of late on the generation there, but yeah. Yeah, it's kind of.
I see the comment. There, somebody said German exit signs say "Ausfahrt," and they are absolutely correct. I laughed about that.
Yeah,
for about a week.
I
especially when you leave a parking garage and you take a little ticket, it says "Gute Fahrt."
Yeah, we in high school. In high school, I took German, and we took a my school did like a, you know, if like every summer if you wanted to go through the school to on a European trip, they did one every every spring break, and the year I went, you know, they went to Germany, which I really wanted to go because, you know, I studied German in class. And and me and my friends were so excited because one of the concepts of for some reason came up a lot in our textbooks was a Rhine fart, which was to take taking a trip down the Rhine River, and we were so excited that we were actually going to get on a boat on the Rhine and go on a Rhine fart. But
oh man, that's great.
yeah, we flew, you know, in and out of Frankfurt, where you are, so that's awesome. You were in France until recently, if I'm not mistaken, though, right?
Yeah, we lived in France for 3 years, and then moved to Frankfurt in 2015, and we will be there for a while, so...
Oh, wow.
But the actual Digital Foundry office is in the UK,
mm-hmm, right.
So I go over there and visit them, and,
okay.
You know, sometimes we film stuff over there, so...
Not entirely remote.
No, but you know, I do most of my work from home, so
awesome. Yeah,
it works. I set up a similar studio to you guys, you could say.
Yeah.
The big crazy mess where if you look behind there and you check out the wires, you just want to pass out. Like, oh, man.
Well, you know, I mean, I talked my work into a few months ago and to let me move my primary office to home because I'm like, look. You know, I've basically spent the last, you know, however many years turning my house into a fully functional TV studio. So, just why not, right?
Exactly. So. You got all the space you need, and everything's ready to go.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Almost ready, guys.
Okay. Sure.
That's cool, man.
Now, you know, still talking about, you know, I saw someone. Mentioned, you know, people saying 240p, which remind me, you know, I have not played the PS2 version of Eco since I even knew what 240p was, but
oh yeah,
so I guess it's 240p, is that right?
Well, yeah, that's what it outputs at. It's technically it's 512 by 224.
Okay,
so it's a slightly wider resolution. It's almost as if they're using field rendering, but they're like dropping half of the fields. You just get sort of a progressive image, but it's lower res.
Now we get, you know, sometimes we'll get an occasional comment that's like retro games cannot be 60 frames per second, or you know, or something like that. Like people are just dead convinced because it's 29.97. They're just dead convinced that.
Guys, I'm gonna restart really quick, but then I have something. Okay.
Oh, okay. You're restarting your computer.
Be right back.
Okay.
Okay.
But
he's going dark.
But you know, I mean, there's, and it's hard to convince them or explain to them. And there's also people who get picky, like, you know, get picky about the distinction between frames per second and fields per second. And it's like, whatever. Yeah. There is new information every field. It's a frame for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and if you're doing 240p anyway, it's kind of, you know,
it's irrelevant.
They're basically doing a progressive image.
Yeah, so. And you know, there's other people who have like said something like, "Well, you know, 240p is not lower resolution. It's like higher time resolution." I don't know. I don't even remember how they phrased it, but you know, I mean, I get what they're saying. Where it's like, okay, yes, you're still drawing a scan line at the same rate. It's just that the scan line is in the exact same spot every time.
Yeah. But the obviously there's 60 frames per second games I consider, so
yeah. So,
and internally anyway, they, you know, they are. So I've been forcing some PS2 games to 40p with the HD loader and everything. I do like doing that. So, you know, a lot of PS2 games are just interlaced, but they can run in progressive scan. So
Right. Pretty few PS. I mean, I've only actually got one PS2 game that runs in 480p, and that's Radiata Stories.
And it took Trice me. Trice was good for that.
Yeah, and it. I mean, it's widescreen, and I think it's 60 frames, if I'm remembering right. So it's pretty.
I think
impressive.
It's a mix. Like some parts of the game are 60, and maybe I can't remember. Like
it's
remember
been a while since
weird,
played the whole thing. I love that game.
That was good, yeah.
Yeah, like the battle system was pretty basic, but like it's the only game that I've ever played that does anything remotely close to Majora's Mask.
Oh yeah.
Where like, you know, everyone in town has this schedule and everyone has like these, you know, if you follow them around, like you'll figure out what their problems are and, you know, how you can do something for them. And I just absolutely, I mean, you know, I love that, and I can't think of any games other than Majora's Mask and Radiata Stories that quite do that.
Yeah, it's kind of a rare thing, but it's very cool.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I used to have the PS2 version of Shadow of the Colossus, the God of War games, you know, all those 480p games. But I went through this phase where, when I got the HD version on PS3, I'm like, well, I don't need the PS2 version anymore. Oh. So I'd sell it. And now obviously I'm making a YouTube show that's about, you know, comparing video things. And so now I regret that, obviously. But did I hear Corey come back?
Yeah.
Okay. What?
Oh, there's Corey.
Yeah, I'm here. Hang on. I'm just getting this. I'm
getting excited by the surprise here. It's going to be something.
I think it's going to be worth it.
Corey's got some good picks. Shall I go ahead and turn off the stream?
No, not yet.
Okay. This sounds like you're preparing something big. I mean, you had to restart your computer and everything?
Well, I was just having an issue with with something. Why is this not... Dang it, why is it not...
Fish and mailed indeed.
you know, we need to look into restream.io because someone in the chat was saying, you know, maybe Time Warner is specifically throttling YouTube for me.
Maybe.
Because really I be stream happening. On the backloggery with no problem, which is through, we used to do through Hitbox. Well, used to do it through Twitch and then we did it through Hitbox. You know, we left Twitch when, you know, they made a bunch of rules we didn't like, and then we decided to go back. But I don't think I really have any problems there. And I always have trouble watching Corey's streams. But YouTube videos in general are fine, but Corey's streams, I usually have to watch at a pretty low resolution. So I don't know. Never thought of that.
Not letting me choose my main monitor is this screen capture film. Let me just add another thing here. This is
This is the most exciting part. Yeah. Everybody's in suspense. It's like, all right, what's he going to play?
We all want to know.
We got
people guessing what system's it going to be.
There we go. Okay.
I'm guessing the Jag.
No, I don't have one.
Oh!
It'd be amazing if I did, but...
When I was there in October, I saw Jaguar and a whole bunch of games at Arcade Legacy.
Yeah. Of course.
They probably still have them.
Okay. Hang on. Almost there.
I love Jag.
Is the chat pissed off?
No, I don't know. I'll send out another tweet saying that you know, now we've got a smooth stream.
While we're talking Jag, the best part is playing Club Drive in two-player mode. Because if you drive up to a traffic cone in the game, it causes the frame rate to drop to about 2 frames per second. So if you wait and you look at it strategically at just the right time, it causes the other guy to completely lose control because of the frame rate dips so low. That's the
okay.
best.
I think we're ready.
All
okay.
right. I'm taking
you,
it down.
You stop the stream and I'll pick it up. All right. Let me know if we appear on the... Oh. Yep. Okay, so you see it. Are we back on the channel? Hang on. Okay. All right, can you guys hear me all right? Okay. Yeah. All right. Let me just go to the streaming and make sure everything's looking good. I have not played this yet. My friend Ricky got it for me. It is the Data East Arcade Classics compilation for the Wii. Oh. They can probably hear you. I didn't have it.
How about now?
Yeah, they should.
Let's see.
Be good now. Will you go ahead and talk really quick?
Yep, I'm just
talk,
gonna talk,
talk. Talk.
Okay.
Talk.
All right.
Talk.
Now we can hear.
Okay.
So what did I miss, guys?
Yeah. Okay.
Let me.
All right. Well, sorry that didn't work out, but you know, let's remember to look into that restream thing because that could
be what we need.
You know, I was always afraid that would just add more stream delay, but that could potentially solve my problem.
Yeah.
Yes, that was something. So now we've gone from Shadow of the Colossus HD to Data East Collection on the Wii. Nobody was expecting that.
This compilation is actually expensive. It's like it's like a $50+ game. But I got it from a local store who had it priced with a really old price. So I got it for $20.
Oh, it's a Majesco joint.
Yeah.
So what do I call this? Data East what?
Data East Arcade Classics.
Data East Arcade Classics.
We're not getting any game audio, though.
All right.
I don't know why we're not getting the
stream description.
All right. So at least we're accurate there. That's good. Okay.
Choose your me.
I don't know why we're not getting any audio from the game.
Well, we got what sounds like computer fans, at least.
It's my furnace up here.
I don't think the audio goes over to the stream that much, though.
Yeah, is it okay? Keyboard. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
so
it's
this
just
has
on
some
Skype.
Good stuff on it. It has Bad Dudes, specifically. Caveman Ninja, which is Joan Mack. Crude Buster,
oh, yeah.
Which is two crude dudes. Heavy Barrel. I don't know what Express Raider is. Lock and Chase. Magical Drop 3.
What was that one with the Indiana Jones looking dude running around on planes and such? I'm forgetting that Data East did. It was an arcade only game.
A Secret Agent is I don't know if that's Sly Spy. That should be. I don't know if a Secret Agent is technically Sly Spy. That's an old favorite. I'm gonna play that. I'm gonna play it. Let's see what's under the extras really quick.
Yeah. I don't know. I assume this output's in 480p, not 240p.
Right. We are doing this in 480p, and I am streaming it through the OSSC.
Got it.
Oh, okay. Cool. Now, I mean, I guess there's a possibility that it could be 240p if you set your Wii to 480i.
Doubtful. Well, I mean, these compilations are never...
Probably not.
Yeah, they rarely are, but as far as
Mega
I know...
Mega Man X Collection.
Yeah, that's one of the few. I don't even know if that runs in 240p on the PS2. I don't know if it what it does.
Yeah,
on,
you're right.
PS2 but as far as I know, though, if you set the Wii to 480p, it will never output 240p in a 240p capable
right.
game.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of stuff. Special mode? I don't know what that is. I'm playing this with the new version of the Wii Classic controller. Yep,
the
this
new
is,
version?
Well, it's just like the later version of it.
I see somebody in the chat asking if you can force 240p on the Wii in Homebrew, using Homebrew, and you can definitely do that with some things.
I know you can like use Swiss to force 240p.
To force that, yeah.
But I've never, I didn't look that hard, but I was trying to look to see if there was a method to force 240p with Wii games, and I couldn't find one.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's... I think it's more for homebrew software and emulators that all support 240p, but you're right. I'm not sure you can force the actual Wii games.
I mean, there's surely... I mean, it's surely possible. I just don't know if anyone has made it. But they totally should.
This was an arcade favorite of mine. It's like never really been ported anywhere else besides like this collection.
Huh.
You know, it's
looks kind of ridiculous.
It's like a James Bond.
Yeah, you know, dudes falling out of the sky. It's pretty cool.
You know, it's almost like Rolling Thunder-esque in the way that...
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Huh. It's interesting how many of these, like, compilation discs came out during, you know... I guess mostly during PS2, Xbox era.
But right.
The Wii got quite a few, as did the PSP.
Yeah, PSP, yeah, like, yeah. They got the SNK Connect collection, like, a lot of SNK stuff.
They have the, I really liked, I guess it wasn't so much compilations, sort of, but they did, like, Salamander, Gradius, and,
That is not playable on the PSTV. Like, for some reason, Konami has made it all their games are not playable on the PSTV. I don't really understand. Man, look at how bad the maybe the scaling is, because look at that background. I don't know if it shows up very well. It's just
even
like,
on the stream, I can see the building
shimmering pretty bad.
Doesn't look right.
Like really, really bad.
Yeah, something's wrong with that. That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't quite see it because obviously I'm watching this stream in 240p.
it's pretty atrocious.
You know, I never thought of that, like that YouTube itself could be specifically throttled. I never thought of that. That could be it.
And somebody's mentioning it's true. That's you can use the Henkaku hack for a homebrew thing for Vita.
Right,
and
but
it works on the PSTV and you can run everything.
Yeah, I upgraded the 3.61, unfortunately.
Oh, okay, so yeah.
Until they find something else. I mean, PSTV is on clearance at a lot of places. Well, I was looking at what?
You were looking at gain another PSTV.
Yeah, when they were on clearance at Target because they were $12 or something like that. But, of course, when I went to get one, they were already gone.
Mm.
Somehow.
Yeah, I have a white one floating around at my house. It's an interesting little device.
A white one? Really? I didn't even realize it.
I think they sent it to me to do. I did some project with it. It must be a Japanese unit, I guess. But
yeah, I think the Vita TV was a wide thing. Have you ever used a Vita development kit?
Not really, no.
Because we went to Limited Run Games. They were getting ready to release Soldner X 2.
Oh yeah.
And they, as we were getting ready to leave, it was their stream time, and they were streaming it on on a Vita dev kit via an HDMI output on it.
Oh yeah, that's right. The dev kits can do that. That's true.
And I was like, I don't know if it was maybe just because the game was running at 60 frames or what, but like it really like looked sharp to me. Looking at on the on their TV, and I was like, wow. So like I you know, and obviously that's my only point of reference, so, but I've almost been wondering if like the video output from the Vita dev kit might be better than the PSTV.
Possibly, because PSTV, I mean, you're not really getting a perfect resolution out of it, right? Because it's
no matter
like,
what you do, because it's 720. Yeah. So I don't know what it outputs at. Like, I don't understand. Like,
these dogs, I can't get it. I can't get in there.
Could it have been like that much more expensive to get the thing like 1080p output? Because the Vita's resolution is half of 1080p.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that's a limitation with the system on a chip they use in the Vita itself. If since it's pretty much the same hardware, they may not have been able to actually do that.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know though what the dev kit was outputting.
Although I have my Vita right here. I was just playing some Crypt of the Necrodancer on here.
Oh, okay.
So I got my white and lime green Vita. So that's a good one.
I was going to see if there's any kind of video options in this. And it doesn't seem to be.
Doesn't look like it.
But yeah, it's weird because, like, you know, 720p obviously just... I was using my PSTV for a while and
look, there's some bad dudes. There's bad dudes billboards in the background.
Nice.
It's very is
because I was like, you know, like wouldn't it make sense like for if like your TV or FrameMeister does a good job deinterlacing, like
Right. Couldn't
you maybe get like a better image with 1080i, because that should in theory fit the Vita's native resolution
right,
better. But
should, yeah.
I mean, I did some lightweight comparisons, nothing like heavy duty, but I just, you know, I tried to get an idea if it was better, and I couldn't determine that it was any better. I think by the time that, you know, any image processing had been done to it, that it was, you know, not discernibly better than
I agree. That's a shame. I really wish there was a way to get a really nice, perfectly scaled, pixel perfect image out of the Vita.
Yeah, and
display.
Yeah, and you know, it we discovered when we were putting together the PS1 episode early this year. I don't think I'd ever tried a PS1 game on the PSTV until then. It's like so bad.
Yeah, and that I think that was the episode where I knew you guys were legit because you mentioned using the PSP Go as the as the micro console. I was like, oh man, I've been doing that for years, and nobody else has ever mentioned that.
I mean, Trigon was specifically for that. You know, he was like, I'm gonna get one. I'm just gonna get one.
I brought that with me here because I wanted to have some sort of console to play on a TV we have upstairs. It's a 480p CRT in the upstairs room, so you know the Vita or the PSP Go is perfect for that. You just put it in the dock, use the DualShock 3, and it's a little micro console.
Yeah,
play some PS1 games on there if you want.
And you have a FrameMeister, right?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Are you aware of the Pixel Purist profiles?
Yeah. I've checked all those out, but I've already had that stuff kind of dialed in myself. But it's fun to compare and see the difference. And there's not that much difference, really. But yeah,
it's. I actually sent him my PSP Go so that he can make PSP profiles because he didn't have a PSP.
Yeah. Right.
And so like the profile that he made, you know, it fills the screen. It's like, it's crazy. It's awesome.
Yep. Yep.
Because, you know, I mean, you know, you can do that. Like PSP is like, what, like it's 1/4 1080p, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it looks amazing.
It does. It looks great. Yeah. I love playing PSP like that.
Yeah. I was just so shocked, though, to discover that, and this was something that I never saw anyone talking about, that PS1 games are 240p out of the PSP.
Yeah, I never saw anybody talk about that, but it's just, you're right, it's amazing.
I discovered that entirely on my own, and I was like, what the heck? Like, this is going to blow people's minds.
Yep.
And we've got a number of comments on that episode, like, whoa, the PSP Go is actually good. Like, here's the thing, the PSP yep. Go is only a joke because it was of the price it was released at.
And also, I mean, Sony didn't support it that well. It's right. Become awesome because of Homebrew specifically, I think. Because then it's just, it literally is like a portable PS1.
DualShock 3.
And anything else you want. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, people just, you know, I mean, the whatever price it released for is irrelevant now. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it doesn't matter how Sony marketing handled it. What matters is that it's actually an awesome piece of hardware.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, I mean, yes, it's true that, you know, there are a lot of good UMD games that never got digital releases, but, you know, there it's a really good piece of hardware. You know, a lot of people were actually, like, legit upset that we did not talk specifically about playing Game Boy games on with PSP emulation. And I'm like, it's like, where do you draw the line? I mean, we could also talk about emulating on, you know, literally 200 other devices. Like, we have to draw the line somewhere. I mean, the episode is an hour long.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, I guess I can see the point because it's like playing a portable game on another portable system.
Yeah, the PSP was actually pretty good for that. Especially, I was always surprised. It's not perfect, but it does a reasonably good job emulating Game Boy Advance. It's a lot of games are full speed, and it looks it's quite nice because you can get a perfect scale on that, or reasonably good image quality out of it. Game Boy, of course, works well too.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think the DSi XL is the best for emulating Game Boy.
Oh, really?
Because you can display the Game Boy's original resolution on that screen, and it mostly fills it up. Or it does a good job nearly filling it up, and because the DSi XL has such a large screen, it just looks awesome on there. It's a really great place to play.
I mean, that's some sort of homebrew technique, I assume.
Yeah, it's a homebrew.
I didn't know that there was DSi homebrew hacks.
Yeah, if you grab, like, you can get one of those cards, you know, where you can load up anything.
Oh, the R4 or whatever.
Yeah, get, like, an R4, you can load homebrew software on there, and, you know, I have a huge Game Boy collection already, like, of actual games, but having that to go, it basically is like a Game Boy in your pocket with tons of games on it, and it looks great.
That's awesome.
It's a good way to play.
It's so funny to think about the resolution of, you know, some of those.
I'm getting killed by these snakes.
it's so funny to think about the resolution of some of those old portable screens, because
This is killing me here. I don't even understand. Like, I cannot get past this guy. I'm like stuck. There we go.
But like, I blew my mind when I was, I made this little graphic in the Game Boy episode where I was kind of explaining why, like, you know, when I was a kid, I'm like, why can't the Game Boy games on the Super Game Boy, why can't they just fill the whole screen? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, why not? You know?
Yeah, when you're young, it's like,
But, and so I made this little diagram in the Game Boy video to explain, like, if you tried to double the Game Boy resolution, it wouldn't fit in, you know,
right,
in a NTSC video system. It'd be too big. So that's why you got to have it with the borders. But then I was like, 144 times 2 is 288. I'm like, holy cow, the PAL Super Game Boy could have
a full screen mode.
Had a full screen mode. It could have if they had designed it that way. But I imagine that the overscan would have been a problem because most Game Boy games have, you know, heads up displays going to the very edges of the screen.
Exactly. And you know what? So, now that you mention that, that Game Boy games are basically, they're kind of 60 hertz. Like, not exactly. It's slightly lower refresh rate than that.
Right.
But I've never actually messed with a PAL version of the Super Game Boy, and I wonder how they handle that.
Well, I'm actually borrowing a PAL Super Nintendo and a PAL Super Game Boy.
And what do you got? Let's do.
I mean, it's I've got a PVM20L5, which can run in a 50 hertz mode.
Right, right.
And I mean, it, you know, I mean, it's interesting because when you're looking at a CRT, you don't get that, like, motion blur effect that you have on an original Game Boy.
Exactly, you don't get that.
So, I mean, yes, the game is running at a lower speed, but you can also, in some ways, I think, see more detail. Even though it's running at a lower refresh, it's almost like it could be considered an advantage in some ways, you know?
Yeah. Fair enough.
I mean, if your only option is a PAL system, it was nuts to me though, because I had, you know, when I
guys, rampant ninja related crimes these days.
You better do something about that.
Seriously,
I love that screen too with the art. That's brilliant.
guys, seriously. There's rampant ninja-related crimes these days.
Who's going to solve this, huh?
I don't know. Maybe a couple of...
Our cops aren't doing crap.
All right, let me just...
But it kind of shocked me because, you know, I was in Germany in 2000. And, you know, I knew at the time that, like... if you bought something, a video thing in Europe, that it wouldn't work at home. Like, I knew, I think I knew of the name that there was, like, NTSC and PAL. I think I knew that at the time, but I didn't know what was different about. I didn't know that, you know, the refresh rate was slower.
Oh yeah.
And, so I remember watching The Rock in Germany, you know, with Sean Connery. It was, which like blew me away because I almost wondered if Sean Connery like did his own. That's like that, by the way, the only time I've seen The Rock. I've only seen it in Germany.
The Rock is a good movie.
A great movie.
Yeah. you know the story about Final Fantasy VIII, right? And the music from the opening.
Oh,
hey, there's Karnoff,
the
guys.
The demo version, right?
Yeah. The music is like exactly out of The Rock.
Exactly, yeah.
I think I've heard that, but I forgot that.
Just so you know, Tri, this is it's a little cameo by Karnoff. Karnoff is the first stage boss.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nice.
Karnoff's like kind of a thing with us. it's a game. He's like a character we love to hate him. There it is.
I mean, I don't know. I think we love to love him, to tell you the truth. Yeah. But.
I mean, in my upcoming video, there is a shot of Karnoff dying.
Oh, no. We've already had a shot of Karnoff dying in one video, and mm-hmm. Karnoff is starting to have a little bit of presence in our videos.
Yeah.
But anyway, as I was saying, I have this very specific memory of when I was in Germany. Watched The Rock, and I was like, almost, I don't know, maybe Sean Connery did his own voice for the dub, because I thought it sounded exactly like Sean Connery speaking German. But,
could be.
But I'm horrible at German. Like, I was the best student in my German class, but I was worse than the worst student in the German class immediately above or below us.
Oh, no.
Our German, for some reason, our German class was just like really bad.
Didn't go well.
We just didn't know. I mean, the only reason I was able to do halfway decent is my dad was, you know, he's not as fluent as he used to be, but I mean, he used to be fairly fluent in German. He lived in Germany for a little while. He worked at a brewery.
Nice.
But yeah, so I mean, yeah, my point is I was in Germany. I watched at least one movie on a CRT, and you know, I don't have a specific, you know, I didn't know what to look for at the time. You know, I didn't know what was different about PAL, but I was like, I was curious. Like, I know this is different from what we have in America, but I don't, you know, I don't know what's different about, but I was shocked playing that PAL Super Nintendo on the PVM. There's this constant flicker effect.
Yeah, it's,
we were
really
just talking about that earlier today.
Yeah, yep, I mean, and you see that on consumer CRTs too, I assume.
Oh yeah, all the time. Yeah,
like it just shocks me. I mean, like, I don't. I mean, I guess if you're used to it, you probably don't really think about it. But like, you don't see that at 60 hertz.
No, not like that.
And I don't understand, like, who, when they were deciding the video standards, said, you know what, this is okay, let's go with this one.
This is like, enough.
Yeah, it's like...
It doesn't have to do, we have like, more to do with, like, electricity.
Oh, yeah, it was actually related to that, that's true.
Right, but, I mean, but you can now run, you know, on the same, in the same areas, you can run a 60 hertz screen now.
Of course, yeah. So it was just something at the time, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it made sense at the time, but it's rough now. Man, it's like, man, like, you know, how do you know, gamers from PAL regions, like, how do they have any love for CRTs?
Well, it's funny. This year at the Eurogamer Expo, they had a massive retro section, and it was all PAL stuff.
Oh, so, man.
It was just like a deluge of PAL CRTs everywhere.
And you're just like getting a constant headache from it.
Like, oh, man, I can't look at any of this. And there's black borders on half the games.
Yeah.
Half of them are slow. It's like,
yeah, it's such a shame, though, that thinking about that Super Game Boy and how it's like squished. And like, as it is, the American Super Game Boy is a little fatter than an actual Game Boy. And then the PAL is like even fatter because of the squish. But I mean, I imagine it would, you know, it was, I think, rare, like in the, did a lot of good N64 conversions, I understand.
Sure, yeah,
I mean, I've not played any of them, but like, I imagine it's much easier to do a proper PAL conversion for a 3D game because, you know, with sprite art, you know, you know your sprites are kind of beholden to being lined up within these scan lines.
Yeah, there's ways around it, and a lot of companies did actually put the effort into getting that right. Mm. But it took effort, and that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, but like, man, that 50 hertz is rough. But I mean, the shame of it is there was no perfect video system back then. You know, I mean,
no, not back then.
You had, you know, it's funny, you know, sometimes we get a lot of comments there like, man, I'm so glad I grew up in Europe because we had RGB. And it's like, I mean, you did have that, but you also had 50 hertz. I mean, it's a trade off. I mean, neither.
So a lot of the late generation CRTs could do 60 hertz. So. Mm.
But the games that you had access to in Europe weren't designed that way.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of the older ones were not. But once you get to like the GameCube era and such, like most of those games, when you start them up, it asks if you want 50, 60 hertz.
Right, right. And I, you know, a lot of people have told us that they felt kind of screwed over by Nintendo in the GameCube era because they didn't offer a 480p mode. They just, you know, you hold B and you get an offer for 60 hertz. And I'm thinking, like, I don't know. I wouldn't, like, I'd be thankful for that. Like that doesn't, I mean, just because they didn't have 480p, I mean, it doesn't make sense that they didn't have a 480p option. But
it's, at the same time, though, for today, we were talking, you know, the real benefit is with the PAL Cube, you can run Game Boy interface in the ultra low latency mode through a frame miser, and it works perfect. But that doesn't seem to work with the component cables on a US system.
Right. So, I mean, the PAL GameCube is technically the best GameCube. I mean, you know, it can use the component cables. It can, you know, it's just that the games that are designed for the system don't natively offer a 480p mode.
Right. There's ways around it. So, you know. Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, the wires in the system, everything is hooked up to be the best in theory.
Yep.
Exactly. So,
I mean, if you just got a region modded and you played US games, you'd be fine. You could play those with component cables.
Yeah,
and...
because the 480p prompt is part of the game, not the system.
Right.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's probably not too bad to mod it either.
No,
I don't think so.
You can do it with boot discs as well.
You get like a freeloader.
Yeah. Like, or what we have. The Action Replay would work too.
Yeah, the Action Replay works great.
Does Action Replay work for that? I wasn't sure.
Well, you can use Action Replay to boot up at least like Swiss and such and force whatever resolution you want.
And then I guess Swiss could do that, yeah. I've only got one Japanese GameCube game.
It's interesting with that because you can include codes to like enhance widescreen and sensitivities with it, so you can get 69 and then make it so that it's not calling the polygons along the sides. And it's
It like messes with the 2D aspects, I guess. Like it stretches them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't think you could do it where you didn't get it to like have like where characters would like pop off before they're totally off screen.
Yeah, it's not designed for that. So some people have come up with like Action Replay style codes where you basically like input that when starting the game.
Interesting.
And it can clean it right up. So
yeah, I mean, I still prefer to play. You know, if a game is designed for 16:9, like I prefer to play it that way. Like,
sure.
I mean, it's neat that you can do it, but I'd rather. You know, play with the aspect ratio intended by the developer. I mean, unless it's like a proper, you know, HD port or something like that, that, you know, has a, I mean, that's still, that widescreen mode has been tweaked and customized.
Well,
not
it's
just,
interesting, you know, though, you say that because it's like with Twilight Princess for the GameCube, the GameCube version is 4:3 only by default. The Wii version supported 16:9. Mm-hmm. But you can use the software to force 16:9 and then sort of fix it up, and you can play it that way with a controller instead of dealing with the Wii mode. But, you know...
The GameCube version, like, the HUD is, like, very... I've actually never played the GameCube version, but from what I've seen, like, the HUD is, like, very intrusive.
because in that
tight 4:3
space. Yeah, it's better. That was always annoying. That's the first version I bought, actually, of that game, so that's how I played it initially. But,
Zombie Karnoff. He's gray. He's like a Dawn of the Dead zombie.
Dead Karnoff. With red pants.
Yeah. John, did you tell everybody about like what we did today?
Did we talk about? We didn't mention that since you weren't on yet.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah, we went out and saw a whole bunch of really nice broadcast monitors.
Yeah.
Some PVMs, some Ikegamis.
Yeah, a local guy bought a whole, like a truckload of them.
Yeah, like literally a truckload. Like,
define truck.
I mean, it's like probably a pickup truck full.
Like, you know, like 20 or 30 of these things?
Maybe. Yeah, some of them were smaller. There's probably 15 to 20, I'd say.
Yeah, 15 to 20. That's probably right.
And how did your friend find out about this?
It's my friend Joey. He met this guy at a what was it, like a college campus was like selling off stuff and like surplus or something like that.
A UC auction going on or something like that. And
okay.
Kind of went up there and did that and
met this guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he watches the show and everything. Like he's like he liked the show like even before like he. New Joy or anything. He was so he bought all these, and there's like one specific monitor he wanted out of the bunch, so he bought the whole lot, but he should be able to sell the rest.
Are you going to buy any, John?
Well, I've had ones before, but I had to get rid of them, but when I moved to Europe, and I would love to get another one, but transporting it there and dealing with that
exactly
it's a pain. So,
Yeah, I mean, the thing I love about this 20L5, which obviously would be almost impossible to get to Europe, but it's awesome because I can do, you know, all the way up to 1080i and including PAL resolutions.
Yeah. I know, that's amazing. That's so nice.
Have you experimented with Swiss running? Like there's like some weird resolutions on it that I haven't tried before. Like there's a 900 something i.
Oh, I think some of those things are actually like mislabeled, I think, but unless I'm thinking of the PS2's HD loader, that might be the one that's one of them has like mislabeled modes in the menus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I updated my Swiss not long ago, so I don't know if it's like a new mode that's in it, but
I have to check it out though, just to confirm.
Say what?
I said I need to check it out myself and confirm. I haven't actually seen it.
Because it appeared very briefly, you know, as I was flipping through the resolutions in the Game Boy video in Swiss, and someone asked, like, hey, how's that 960 something I? I don't remember what the number is. But I you know, they were like, how is that? And I was like, I don't know. I haven't tried it. And I'm like almost afraid to, because I'm like, I assume it won't hurt the 20L5, but like, I don't know what it really supports. I mean, I doubt it would hurt it.
It'd probably be fine.
But I mean, the thing is, it's not going to change the frame buffer in the GameCube. It's just going to output it a weird resolution.
Exactly.
I don't expect any benefit, but it'd still be an interesting thing to test.
Yeah, I agree. That kind of stuff's neat. I think at this point, though, what I've done for Game Boy interface is I just set everything to auto-load, so you just put the action replay disc in and hit power. And
the
game just boots, and it's like, all right.
What is it auto-exec?
Yeah, you have to name it auto-exec.
Okay, because I haven't done it yet, but...
Oh, you mean for the Game Boy? For the Game Boy interface?
Yeah.
You can make it go right to it?
If you rename the GBI LL, just rename it auto exec, then you don't have to like do the list and everything.
Really?
Exactly. You just put the action replay disc, hit power on the GameCube, and you wait, and it eventually just loads the Game Boy game like straight away. It's like
obviously got to switch it back if you want to do anything else
Swiss
with it. Because I use Swiss. I used a program to
get a specific SD card just for that.
Right.
I just put the SD card in, and it's good.
Ah. That makes sense.
Well, I have a 256 megabyte card. Maybe I'll just use it for that.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You just use a small card and it's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone said that. See, the reason I wasn't doing that is because someone left a comment on the GameCube video back in March or April, whenever that released. And said, oh, you can rename the GBI auto boot, and it'll, you know, you won't have to select it. I'm like, oh, cool. So I rename it auto boot, and I'm like, it doesn't work. And then someone replied to the Game Boy video saying you can name it auto exec. I'm like, oh.
So I'm going to do that immediately.
I haven't tried it yet, but
it does work. It's really great. It's
I just want everybody to know
seamless.
That I'm playing all the way through this game just so I can get to the you want to go get some burgers with President Ronnie.
That's the real point, yeah.
Is this might be the most 80s game. Because, I mean, it's got ninjas, it's got like parachute pants.
Parachute pants. It's got the, president saying dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's called Bad Dudes. It's got, you know.
There's dragons all over in the artwork. And
yeah, it is like the most 80s. It's like 80s culture, like right here.
Is it more 80s than Double Dragon Neon?
Well, Double Dragon Neon is like
riffing on it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. This is like
Double Dragon Neon's pretty dope. That's a good game.
It's a great game. Amazing soundtrack in that one. I chose to play this, I almost played Shantae Half Genie Hero, and I thought that people might be annoyed that maybe they were waiting for it to come out and they didn't want to see like late in the game. But
yeah,
it's
I've got the retail copies on order. I had to get that on the, you know, physicals.
Yeah. I mean, I backed it, but I want a physical copy too.
I was going to get a PS4 digital copy, and then get a Wii U physical copy, because, like, I just feel like Way Forward games should be on Nintendo console. It turned out that I had apparently requested longer. Like, I don't really pay attention to, like, Kickstarter emails and stuff.
Right.
So I was like, I was unsure if I'd even miss my opportunity to say which version I want. But apparently I had requested Wii U. So I played through the whole game on Wii U, and I switched my Amazon pre-order to the PS4 version. And that's actually kind of going to work out, because, like Corey pointed out, that's like going to go good next to the Risky's Revenge and Pirates Curse limited runs. So so it'd be cool to have three Shantae games on my PS4 shelf. But I played the Wii U version. Like, I mean, you know, I'm sure I don't notice frame rate drops as much as the Digital Foundry guys, but it's
smooth on there.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I did not notice any frame rate drops, and I didn't notice any, like, you know, anything that made it look like. Like, if you were looking at certain animations or something, like, you could maybe see a little aliasing, but I guarantee it looks the same on PS4. I can't imagine that it would be very different.
Yeah.
No, I think there's actually some added, like, fog effects in some areas that's missing.
Oh, really?
In the Wii U version and a few things like that, but it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
As far as I understand.
John, would you say that doing what you do on a daily basis has made you, like, really, really, you know, sensitive to frame drops and stuff like that? And do you think that it affects your enjoyment of games now?
No, because I was always sensitive in that way. So that's, you know, that's part of why I'm a good fit for it.
I mean, do they overall bother you, or is it just kind of like?
It depends on how they occur. Like, actual slowdown, where it's like it's mostly smooth, but you get some drops I can deal with. But when there's like really weird inconsistencies or bad frame pacing, that kind of stuff, that just drives me insane.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk of frame pacing in a lot of Digital Foundry articles.
Oh my gosh.
And I've been afraid to really, like, look at it that hard, because I don't want to notice.
Is that what the problem with Mario Kart 8 had? Is that where it skips
That one was actually different. That's not frame pacing's like you're still averaging, like, say 30 frames per second, but you have some frames are on screen for 16 milliseconds, some are on for 33 milliseconds, and others 50. So it's like you're still getting the same average frame rate, but the frames are all persisting on screen for variable amounts of time.
Yeah. See, I didn't
juddery.
I know that was a big criticism of Bloodborne. I'm not sure who wrote the Bloodborne article.
That was Tom. That drove me nuts.
But I think that was the first time that I saw the term frame pacing used for that specific issue, was the Bloodborne article.
There he is.
I don't remember.
There he is.
Was that like was that really an issue last generation, or is that like a new to this generation?
It was actually an issue, not as often, but in fact, it actually could show
the president's like, "Hey, dude, thanks."
It could show up in games on like PlayStation generation
and
stuff.
Thanks. Party on, dudes.
Hey, dudes. That's picture, man.
Hey, dudes. Thanks.
Classic.
Thanks for saving me from the dragon ninja.
What they missed is it's like, hey, dudes, let's go for a burger. Ha ha ha. Psych. Get out of my office.
It's like giving the fist right there. These guys, these bad dudes.
But yeah, I mean, I've probably noticed it at times. Like, I was surprised, you know, I played Knack at the PS4 launch, and then I read the Digital Foundry article about it, and I was like, really? That game was over 30 frames a second? I just you know, because it's
hang on. It says glad to see how you enjoyed the game. Watch out, Data East new games to come. Watch out, new Data East games to come. Watch out.
Thinking of NAC, did you check out? We did a video. We put up a video recently where I did some dual wield action.
I saw the link to it. I haven't watched it.
It's worth checking out because it's pretty neat to be able to play this. Play two systems with one controller, basically.
Yeah, that's wild. Like, I really like NAC.
We joke on it, but I actually had a fun time with it too.
Yeah, like it's such a simple game. It's like no one cares about it. But you know what I like about it is that it feels like a game that would have released on the original PlayStation in like 1998.
And they
made it like this headliner game for the PS4 launch. This game where the shoulder buttons literally do nothing.
I know.
Like the fact that they had the balls to make such a simple game. It's awesome.
I was there for one of the early presentations with Mark Cerny, and that was the first time I met him, and I actually argued with him over his choice of frame rate. I said he should have capped it at 30 frames per second, and he swore that it's like we got to keep it unlocked because it just feels smoother. But it's like no, but you get less consistent input latency because you're bouncing back and forth. And we went on for a little bit. It was quite.
Was he like, well, you know, John?
He's like, who is this little ant? Speaking to? No, he's a nice guy. He's fun. He's cool.
I really loved how like kind of how prominent he became, like with the PS4. You know.
Yeah.
He really did. He took a big role on that, and for good reason too, because. Yeah, the development environment on the PS3 was a mess.
Yeah. But I do remember thinking NAC like seemed very choppy, and I just assumed it was a 30 frames game
with dips,
losing a lot of frames. But then I want to say that the Digital Foundry article said that it is actually usually above 30 frames.
Yeah, it's usually about 35-ish frames per second.
Yeah,
Which is bad because then it doesn't sync up with the refresh rate, which is why it looks so jittery.
Yeah, so I mean that's interesting. But then, like, I remember reading the infamous Second Son.
Yep. Oh yeah. Article. I did that one.
And I remember the.
I missed it. What was the deal with that?
The initial impression from the launch code was that there should have been a 30 frames cap option because it's uncapped.
Oh, right. That's why they added it in later, right?
And they did add it, yeah.
They did. And
they totally did.
Have you replayed the game with the cap or played,
I guess? Well, I did end up replaying most of it with the cap or finishing it with the cap. But now it's interesting in the PS4 Pro, if you play in 1080p mode, you can almost hit a nearly stable 60 frames per second.
Interesting.
That game.
Actually, today I was Skyping on a stream, but I wasn't really doing anything. So I actually spent today reinstalling my physical games while nice. I was on the stream. I was reinstalling my physical games on my PS4 Pro because I couldn't I couldn't do the system transfer because I had put a 2 terabyte drive in my PS4.
Oh yeah.
And I wanted to put that drive in my Pro, so I couldn't do like the normal system to system transfer. I had to do the backup and restore.
Right.
But the biggest drive I had available to do the backup was a 250 gig. So I don't have a ton of digital games for PS4. So
yeah, me neither. Well,
you probably do for the office.
Yeah, I got tons and tons of digital codes. It's true, but you're right. My personal games that I buy usually more retail.
Right. So I deleted like almost all of my physical installations, and that was able to get small enough to fit on the 250.
Oh yeah, that's good.
It was this huge pain because I actually ended up swapping the drives between the systems like a bunch of times because I couldn't figure out why it wouldn't work. And I didn't realize, like, I probably did this when I installed the 2 terabyte in my original PS4, but I just didn't remember, like, you have to install the firmware again.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't find, like, I couldn't find good instructions on how to do that, and... So yeah, it took me a while. I ended up swapping the drives a bunch of times. It's really obnoxious. But anyway, so I did spend today reinstalling my my PS4 games. And I kept thinking, like, what were the games on that Digital Foundry list? The PS4. Yeah, because I thought of Infamous. I already tried Knack just a little bit, which still seemed a little inconsistent. But
well, if you play it in the high frame rate mode, it's a lot better, but still kind of wobbly.
Right.
It is surprising they even decided to do like another. Probably just because the second one is coming out. Like the sequel is being made.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did that as part of like optimization tests for the second game.
Yeah, and the game was a million seller at least.
It's crazy. So, I mean, considering that
it was a launch game, there wasn't much else to buy. I mean, no one
did it sell
to
more
care
than. I wonder
game,
if it sold more than Killzone. Which was like the flagship launch game.
Yeah,
I didn't like Killzone.
I liked it okay. I thought it was cool, but
I have tried Killzone games several times, and I do not like them.
That's fair. Yeah, that was probably the one I liked the most actually. It reminded me of Crysis almost.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can see that.
Back to Infamous. I after they added the cap. I was getting ready to do a replay, and I think I completed it. I think I got everything in it, and I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna play with the 30 frames cap, but I don't know, I still liked the uncapped better. It surprised me because I'm normally with you. Like, I like that stable 30 frames.
The problem, though, is even with the cap, it wasn't actually completely stable. And there was some weirdness with it. So it was never completely smooth.
Yeah. And I think that I want to say Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, it also offers a cap mode, right? Maybe?
Not the Definitive. The Tomb Raider Definitive Edition was unlocked only on PS4.
Oh, okay.
It was capped on the Xbox One.
And that didn't get a pro patch, the first Tomb Raider didn't, right?
Not the first one, no. Okay. Just the Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Okay.
Yeah. But,
I just played Xbox One version that I had sitting around for a long time. I thought it was a great game.
It was, but the Xbox One version is the one that has the most input lag.
Right. And, you know, I didn't notice it. I was expecting it to be, like, a big issue. But
I still had a great time with it, like you. But I felt like aiming with some of the more precise weapons was slightly annoying, so I focused more on stealth.
It's really too bad that, you know, everything else, like I guess like the 360 version doesn't have any kind of input lag, and then now they've fixed it on the PS4. It's just too bad that they won't go back and fix the Xbox One version. You think is it like a technical limitation?
No, not at all. I think it's because the company Nixes did it for PC, 360, and PS4, where Crystal Dynamics themselves did the Xbox One version. Mm. And I think it's their responsibility to update it. Nixes is the one that's been fixing and patching these other versions.
So it's probably not even worth the effort to do the Xbox One version at this point.
So even though Nixes is like hired by, I assume, Square Enix... Like the port house takes the initiative to push these ports through, or
well they probably thought that it was affecting the sales of the PS4 version probably, and they
well
like,
I mean that's what's on the that's what they do is port games pretty much, it seems, and that's you know, they want to get that right, whereas I'm sure Crystal Dynamics, after finishing Rise of the Tomb Raider, was already working on other projects and
Right.
I'm not sure what the whole situation was, but I suspect it could be fixed. But
what causes bad frame pacing to happen, because there, I mean,
how you refresh the screen, and there's different ways to, like, they've actually had issues with that in the Rise of the Tomb Raider patch. They first, on PS4, it launched with bad input lag. They patched it and it was better, and then they patched it again to improve it further, and they changed the way it synced to the screen and it introduced bad frame pacing issues. And now they've patched it again, and it's, the frame pacing issues are gone, but it's slightly leggier again. So, like, it's really...
It's always something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it basically just a flip of a switch, but there's, like, trade-offs, or what is it?
You know what? In some cases, I know for a fact, talking with the developers, that it was literally like, we had one variable that we had to switch, like, the update interval from, like, 0 to 1 or something like that. Like, literally, a single number switch in this fix.
I mean, is this something that like, a lot of people who work on these games, like, I mean, even, like, the graphics engineers, like, they just don't know about that, or...
I'm not sure how people miss it, to be honest. It's very strange.
Well, I mean, do they just not know about it? Is it just something that the people who are working on the game literally know about?
I refuse to believe that the incredibly smart people building these engines don't know, and I'm not sure. It's got to be somewhere deeper in the chain. Like at that point when the game's getting close to ship, like, they're not used to looking at it. Or they're not looking at it in the same way, or, like, reviewing it for release in the same... Like, it has to be something like that, because there's... I just don't see how they could miss that. Because, I mean, to build an engine and doing some of the stuff these guys are doing is unbelievably difficult. And it's like, to get that far and to miss something like that, it's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's got to be some sort of, like, internal reason for it.
Like, it's so weird, like, that apparently that's an issue in the base version of Final Fantasy 15 on PS4, but not on Xbox One.
And I understand why. Like I said, in on Xbox One, they're using an adaptive vertical sync kind of solution. Well, it's V-synced, but it can drop. But all that shows is that they're refreshing the screen in a different way. They're using a different mode there, basically, than on PS4. Okay. And I think that's the cause.
So what did it mean in the article when it said that it's... Because I played through the whole game on PS4 Pro. Using the light mode as per Digital Foundry's recommendation.
That's the way.
Which, I mean, looked, I mean, incredibly smooth.
Still great, yeah. It was pretty smooth in that mode.
You know, sometimes I did agree that the cutscenes sometimes looked a little janky.
Yeah.
And it was said that the frame pacing is only really noticeable in the in-engine cutscenes, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that was an accident that worked that way? I mean, why would it exist in some aspects of the presentation and not
else? I mean, in some cases, it depends on the root cause, but it can be a more complex issue. And, you mean, it's all about, you're taking all these different systems and you have to complete your frame in 33 milliseconds, and depending on the render chain and everything, I mean, there can be issues where you're very close to that target, and maybe spilling a little bit over, and it's, you know, which might explain why the high-res mode has more issues with it, and maybe the cutscenes have more issues in light mode, because they are potentially more demanding. And it's hard to say without seeing what they're actually doing within the engine itself, but it does make me think it's something to do with the way they're updating the screen, because of the fact that it's not a problem on Xbox.
I briefly looked at the high res. They just call it high res, I think, in Final Fantasy 15, the high res mode. Which, I mean, obviously, I guess more modes are to come. I mean, I'm really curious. I am highly skeptical of the truthfulness of this proposed 60 frames mode.
Well, my fear there is that we're going to end up with a situation like Infamous or something, where it's kind of... It's just
mostly in, like, the mid-40s, right?
Yeah, and that would be... And if they got rid of the light mode as we have today and replaced it with that, that would be a disaster.
Yeah. And that could be what they're thinking of doing.
That actually might happen. That's what I'm worried about. It's like,
that sounds like a thing they would do. you know, I never finished what I was starting to say about Infamous, but like, oh, I sort of did. I said that I didn't play like for an extended time on the 30 frames cap on Infamous, but it was like, man, I think I like the uncapped better. Like, it's still, even though it was, it averages in like the mid 40s, right?
No, it more averages around 35 to 40.
Really? It's that low? Yeah,
it's pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's better in First Light. First Light, because they optimize some of the shaders. And
oh, okay. I've not played First Light. I need to import it because it's...
It's got a physical edition in Europe.
Europe. You have it, right, Corey?
No.
I mean, as I've said before, if you guys ever want any physical games from Europe, let me know and I'll bring it next time. So I see First Light on retail all the time at the stores and the discount bins. So
that's got to be cheap.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a European. I'm really looking for the European version. There's probably very, very small chance of you ever finding this. The European version of the PS2 version of Assault Suit Vulcan.
Oh yeah, that.
You know, that never came out here. It's just the remake of Cybernator, called here. And now, like, the European version is like, you know, it has a 60 hertz mode when you first boot it up.
Yep, right.
And, you know, it's all in English and everything, so... But now it's getting expensive on eBay. That version. Mm. Like, the Japanese version is not expensive, but... And it was, like, a budget game. It was, like, released by, like, SOS or something like that. It was, like, a $20 game. So if you ever see one of those...
I remember that kind of stuff when they would, like, rebrand shooters and other games like that in, like, weird ways. Like, do you remember Mobile Light Force?
Yeah, and it was Castle Shikigami or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
and there was Mobile Light Force and Mobile Light Force 2, and they both,
that's right,
there was one on the PS1 and one on the PS2, and they had the same cover. They were different games.
Same cover.
Of like the four like girls running.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this has nothing to do with the game.
I know, like, not even close. It's
just, they may as well just put like a picture of a Big Mac on there.
Yeah. It's like, probably would have been more interested in that than.
There's a local store near me that has had for months a European version of Ninja Gaiden Shadow for the Game Boy. It's called, the PAL version is called Shadow Warriors.
Oh yeah.
And I eventually just asked him, I said, do you know what this is? They said, no. You've got the PAL version of Ninja Gaiden Shadow, and I have no idea how that could have gotten
here. Why didn't you buy it?
I love that stuff.
Yeah, this summer. I bought the U.S. version. It's a great game. The one like PAL release that I can think of off the top of my head that I kind of want to get, and I think it might be a little bit expensive, like maybe at least $50, but I could be wrong. There is a European exclusive Lolo game for the Game Boy.
Huh.
I'm a big fan of the Lolo Eggerland series.
See, that's what I love about Game Boy. Some systems you can easily buy up games in Europe without problem, and Game Boy is one
of those. Right. That's the only Game Boy European exclusive I'm aware of that I'm kind of curious about.
And you gotta have your variants, like you gotta get your Probotectors.
I think it'd be cool to have a Probotector.
It would be kind of cool to have a Probotector, though I couldn't run it easily. I mean, I'm borrowing a PAL Super Nintendo, but it's not mine to keep.
But remember that PAL Game Boy games are, I mean, it's a universal system, so.
Yeah. That's I think, why that Lolo game caught my eye, because I was like, oh, this is like no hassle.
And Mega Drive stuff is not bad. Anything from like 93 and before usually has no region encoding, so you can just play it on a regular American system, and it usually works at normal speed.
Really interesting.
A lot of the games were not optimized for PAL, so
aren't a lot of a lot of Genesis games and Mega Drive, don't they have like all three versions on the same cart?
Yeah, pretty much. So it's a weird situation.
Yeah. But Yeah, and then back to the back to the frame rate things. Rise of the Tomb Raider, that was more like, maybe that's the one I was thinking of when I was saying it's more like mid 40s, right?
Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, or
Rise of the Tomb Raider. I meant Definitive.
The Definitive one is, it often gets up to 60, and it's often around 45 to 50. So
Okay. In my mind, I remembered that and Infamous being pretty similar, but I guess not. I don't know. Like, I'm normally all in favor of the 30 cap, but
like I said, in Infamous, the 30 cap was not actually that well implemented. So
right. Yeah, it just
pacing issues, and it was a little hitchy. Okay.
In Final Fantasy 15, I briefly poked around in the, you know, I don't have a 4K TV. I'm hoping to get one next year. But I briefly poked around the high res mode or whatever they call it. And I didn't record anything to see if there was a difference, but like at a glance, I couldn't see any visual difference. And I didn't run around that much because I'm like, I don't want to see the frame pacing. I don't want to understand it.
You don't
want to
know.
I don't want to know. I don't want to be burdened by this curse.
Is Bloodborne supposed to get a pro patch? I mean, it seems like that's crazy that it wouldn't,
right?
Yeah,
no one said anything about, but you would, that's like, that's got to be
like the most requested one
for the most popular PS4 exclusive, so it should get one.
Yeah, but it's From Software, so
yeah,
it's a shame. It really could use one.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, I did not notice the issues in that or Dark Souls 3.
Man, I can't put, I'm a little envious of that, actually.
Yeah, I remember reading it. I read on Digital Foundry. I'm like, frame pacing issues. I'm like, seems fine to me. I mean, you know, I think when motion is mostly in the Z axis, it's harder to.
But
it's frame rate issues in general are not as obvious to me when most movement's in the Z axis.
Yeah, it's definitely less significant. I still love that game despite the issue. But.
Now, do you all get, like, we get this sometimes, you all get comments back that are, you know, well, I don't care about all this stuff, it's all about the gameplay, you know,
and much worse.
Yeah.
If we continue to grow, we'll get much, much, much worse, I'm sure.
It's one of those things where,
just play the game and enjoy it. It's like, it's not changing our enjoyment of the game at all. We just think it's fascinating to look at this stuff.
It's interesting, and it's just another aspect. Like, I mean, here's the way I look at it. Obviously, yeah, gameplay is first in the vast majority of situations. Absolutely. But I think it's short-sighted and foolish to not admit that all of these other aspects equate to your total enjoyment of the game. Do you want to be running around a maze as a red square? I probably not. You know, I mean, the graphics, the video quality, the music, the sound, the acting, the little touches, all those things, they add up to your total enjoyment of the game. And yes, gameplay is first, but, and of course, you know, I've played games with lackluster gameplay that just, you know, certain other aspects, like, you know, the story or the music or just something about it, you know, those imperfect games that just become more than they should be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's examples of stuff like that. But so, yes, I mean, gameplay, of course, gameplay is first. But
I think it's the whole package that matters. The best games are the ones that have it everything.
Yeah, and people want to posture themselves as being like, well, I don't care about graphics, it's all about the gameplay, just to like show like how legit they are or something. And I just think it's ignoring other important parts of the whole complete package, and also like, you know, totally crapping on the work that so many people put into making these games, you know,
look as best as they can,
the best they can be, you know.
Exactly. I
think people also confuse graphics and video quality. We're not really talking about graphics.
No, exactly. It's more like how to get the best picture out of your system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know.
So you can appreciate the look of the games more.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even really think of myself as a video file that much. Like, I just think it's
You are. Yeah, we are. Like, it's just the way it is.
But at the end of the day, like, I also think there's something fun about, you know, taking a wood panel TV and hooking up your NES and playing it in RF. Like, there is a certain quality to that experience that is fun and appealing, but it's also not what I want for my main setup.
Yeah, no, I get you.
But, you know, I mean, I just think it's interesting. I think looking at all the angles is interesting. And sometimes people get frustrated because they watch the whole video and they're like, well, what is the best?
Yeah,
that's right.
Sometimes we do drop a little bit of opinion there. Like, for example, in the Game Boy episode, I specifically wrote a line in there that says, like, you know, we really like the AGS 101. And, you know, I also tried to hint that we really like the Super Game Boy and we really like the Game Boy player with the low latency mode. You know, we tried to hint a little bit, and that one was our favorites, but we don't want to say this is the best because we don't want someone to feel like just because they don't have the same.
Yeah, I agree. Exactly.
That they're getting a subpar experience.
Yeah, whatever makes people happy when they're playing.
Whatever makes you happy, whatever fits within your budget, what works best in your setup. I mean, not everyone's setup's going to be the same. I mean,
there's plenty of people that just say, just get a Raspberry Pi and play it on there. Problem solved.
Yeah.
How can anybody? There's one guy that said, you know, I can't believe that I just watched this video. It's such a waste of time. I don't understand. Like, emulate it. You're done. There's no other option.
Yeah. And there's someone that's like, there's another one was like, it was like, why did you make this video when everyone knows emulation's the best?
Yeah.
It's like, and what I always say to people who say that is like, I mean, I don't have anything against emulation, and you know, I prefer the authentic original hardware experience, but I can enjoy an emulated version if I need to. It's like,
yeah, I mean, for me, it's like preservation.
Right. It's, you know, but here's the thing that I tell people. I say, you know, as long as you get the experience, the full experience that you were looking for out of a game, then that is good. If you know, playing a GameCube game and 4K at 60 frames per second is what you really wanted, then there's that option for you. If playing an NES game, you know, in RGB but on the real system is what you want, then that is the option available to you. If playing on the original hardware is important to you, then, you know, that is, you know, here is how you can do that. If it's not important to you, then, you know, there are other options. I'm not saying that you got an inferior experience playing a game in composite or playing a game on an emulator or playing it in RGB. I'm not saying any of those are better or less. It's what you wanted.
Exactly.
I see somebody saying that DF Retro is the current blast from the past. What do you have episodes? What are kind of like your dream episodes that you would love to do, like, in the new year? Like, I know that you kind of teased what your next episode is going to be.
One of the ones I was trying to line up, but it might be tough because of the current situation, is I wanted to go visit Crytek and go back to Far Cry and Crysis and all that in the early days of that. But they're currently having some issues, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
And they are in Germany, right?
Oh, they're in the same city where I live, so.
Oh, wow, that would have been perfect.
Yeah, I read something about how, like, they're, like, nobody really knows what's going on. Like, they haven't released the game.
That's happened twice.
Yeah, no, it sucks. It's a real shame because they've done some great stuff, but the Yearly Brothers, it's a shame. But there's actually a good amount of developers in Frankfurt area, I found, and give a special shout out to my friends at Deck 13 working on the Surge. Those guys are quite cool.
And, the Surge? I'm not familiar. Is it?
It's a it's basically a Dark Souls ish style game, but it's more cyberpunk.
Oh, than, cool.
So
I could get into that.
It seems pretty cool, but but yeah, it's nice to see that the Frankfurt scene has some good devs on.
Yeah.
Of course, Star Citizen's the one that always kind of gets the press, both good and bad.
I haven't played a lot of Star Citizen. That's PC only right now, right?
Yeah, and it's still got a ways to go. So we'll see how things turn out.
Yeah,
I hope it works out though. But yeah,
John, okay. One.
Yeah,
go on.
No, please, by all means.
I'm just gonna say one. You know, it just popped in my head. One thing I want to ask you about, I was, you know, it's cool that you all have been doing some 4K TV reviews. So that's, you know,
yeah,
very helpful for people like me who are, you know, hoping to buy one next year. And I'm hoping that, at one point I was saying I was going to hold off for OLED to be like affordable. that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. And I don't, honestly, right. I don't even know if LG is like the only. Like, Panasonic's releasing some OLED stuff next year, right?
They've already have an OLED.
But, you know, TV, but I want
to
say...
Is that, like, the proper way to say OLED? OLED? I mean, is it bad to say OLED?
OLED?
Doesn't matter. We always just say OLED, but I, you know...
You don't say LED.
No, it's, you know, it's just a shorthand thing, but,
yeah.
You know... I've been very happy with the LG so far, but yeah.
Do they have pretty fast like response time?
Well, for input lag. Well,
that's what I mean. Not response time.
What's interesting is that they were petitioned recently about HDR game mode and everything. And at least if you get the E6, C6, or any of them, you get all the modes are about 33 milliseconds, including an HDR, which is not too bad.
But some of the articles were you know, kind of saying, you know, hey, these Panasonics are, you know, pretty good. And
they're over 100 milliseconds of lag. That's the problem.
Oh, oof. Really?
Yeah. But that was, you know, they're working on new stuff. I expect that will improve.
Okay, yeah. But the thing that intrigued me, and I was curious, the main thing I want to ask, I noticed... that there was a nearest neighbor scale up from 1080p to 4K available as an option in at least one of those. Is that like a common 4K option, or is that a Panasonic thing, or is that just on that one TV, or what? Because that sounds like for the FrameMeister, that's like amazing.
Yeah, it's input lag right now is tricky because a lot of TVs are. Or a lot of manufacturers have been very inconsistent with what they do. And sometimes you can't even expect it across the whole range. Like, Sony has some ones that are quite low, but then they're, like, top-of-the-line screens are, like, relatively high in comparison. It's very strange. I'm not sure what's going on over there with the engineering.
I'm not really talking about input. Like, I'm talking about, like, the scaling mode. Like,
oh, the scaling mode.
There was on one of the Panasonic TVs that was showing, there was the nearest neighbor.
The nearest neighbor mode is very rare because I think most scaling is designed for video, not
right, game. Which, I mean, and I would imagine if I was to hook up a PS3 or an Xbox 360 to a 4K TV, you probably do want the smoother scaling mode, I would assume.
It looks pretty good, I will say. The scaling's pretty good, but the nearest neighbor mode would be nice to have.
Yeah, I mean, just for the FrameMeister. I mean, then you've got, it looked like that TV, at least Digital Foundry didn't show it, then indicate that there was a nearest neighbor style scale for 720p, but for 1080p, they did have it, which would be, you know,
quite nice.
In theory, that would look unbelievable for the Frame Meister, but I imagine the smoother. I mean, once you've scaled up pixels five times, I mean, even if you do a blurry scale twice more, it still looks pretty sharp.
Yeah, I think scaling the Frame Meister to 4K on that with the scan lines especially looks quite good. And what's interesting is you can use the TV itself has its own. You can do like custom scale where you can basically like manipulate the width and height and like zoom in and everything. And because the screen has so many more pixels in it, you can do that without it interfering with the scan line effect. So you can basically full screen the Frame Meister and use the scan line effect, and it looks good. And there's just a touch of softness that actually looks slightly closer to like, say, like a 600 line CRT. Because, you know, the edges are sharp, but a little bit soft around the scan lines.
Right.
So it looks good from normal viewing distances.
Yeah, I mean, we want to, I mean, you know, I think Corey is also thinking about getting a 4K TV next year.
I want to get a 4K camera first.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, like which I do have now, because that's nice. That's how I zoom in so tightly on a lot of stuff. Is because I edit on 1080p timeline, but I shoot my B-roll in 4K. So it helps a ton. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what I'll go for, but I mean, it's looking like I want to get something really good, but it's also seeming like I could probably get something really good without spending like a ton of money like I would for OLED.
Well, keep an eye on the OLED prices. They're really starting to come down.
It depends on how much money I can save up. Like, I don't have a price point in mind now. Like, I'm trying to fund it entirely by money raised through our YouTube endeavors.
So okay,
I'm planning to set aside, you know, what I'm doing right now is I'm like dumping, you know, as much money of that as I can into my bank account after we get paid, because if I don't do that, then I'm going to end up, because it's in PayPal. If I don't do that, then I'll end up buying something on eBay.
Oh, man.
I'll just end up buying old games on eBay if I've got, you know, money sitting in my PayPal. You know, that's just what happens. But,
Well, that's like after 11. I kind of want to tell people, like, what's going on for this week. Is that cool?
Go ahead. Go for it.
So, next Sunday is Christmas. It's Christmas Day. So, we won't be streaming next Sunday. And the week after that is actually New Year's Day. We'll probably stream New Year's Day night. Like, that's probably not going to be a problem. But there won't be a stream next week, but we are, I mean, John, do people in the chat know that you're like local to me? I mean, besides that we talked about like that we went,
We may have mentioned that. Yeah. I think we mentioned that at the beginning of the stream, but, since I'm from the same area where Corey lives,
which is like
now,
the most random, is really like the most random thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm here for the holidays for 3 weeks and, you know, the same town.
So on Wednesday we're gonna do a bonus stream instead of on Christmas, and John is gonna come to my house. And if you guys have ever seen his really fantastic episode of Symphony of the Night, the Digital Foundry DF Retro episode where he compares the Saturn version and the PS1 version, and I recently just got the Saturn version, so we're gonna stream the PS1 version and the Saturn version side by side at the same time, both on my couch.
Exactly.
So it should be
awesome.
Yeah, and John just like knows a ton about the game, so I'm sure he can probably be repeating a lot of stuff from the video, but you can point out a lot of stuff.
We can talk through it in real time, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we are planning on doing. It's going to be like a special because we won't have a stream next week. So,
perfect.
Yeah, that is what is happening.
So Corey, what is what's your current
status on the EverDrive episode?
What's your belief that there will be an episode before Christmas?
There's a very, very small chance of there being an episode before Christmas. I'm working on this EverDrive episode. It is over 30 minutes. It covers seven different EverDrives. I feel like I cover things that like a lot of videos on EverDrives don't cover.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing.
It's like it's not just you can play your ROMs on it. It's more, right. You know, like it's not like about how it works as much as it's kind of like, here's something to look out for, and here's some like cool things that you might not know you can do with it.
Yeah, that's good.
It's going to be really good. I was really impressed with the script.
So and even since then, I rewrote and added so much. Or did you read it today?
I didn't read your sections today, but I mean, you know, even from the initial version of the script, I was really impressed.
Yeah. So it's like that is happening. I just don't think I'm going to have enough time to do it. I'm not going to have enough time to finish it because I go to my wife's parents on Friday, and we'll be home like Christmas Eve night. But you know,
you're not gonna work on video all Christmas Eve. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna work on it. And you know, the day after Christmas is my birthday, and you know, like I probably won't work on it like that day either. And I'm gonna try to get as much as done as I can leading up to it. But I just don't think it's gonna happen in time. I think it'll be out next week. It's just like the video. I have three of the sections done. I have the Master System EverDrive, the NES EverDrive, and the Turbo EverDrive sections finished.
Nice.
And I just have the Super EverDrive, the SD to SNES, the Mega EverDrive, and the EverDrive 64 left to do. I'm kind of in a good groove with it. I'm doing one section completely at a time.
Okay.
So it's just...
Sound the Game Boy.
Yeah. And, you know...
That's how you do it, yeah.
I just need to... I'm going to have time to work on it because, you know, my wife and kids are leaving town on Wednesday. But, I mean, of course, now, like, we're gonna stream from here Wednesday night. And, you know, like, I don't, like...
I mean, you know, I didn't get, you know, as bad as I wanted to get the Game Boy episode out before Thanksgiving. I mean, it just didn't happen. So, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, we got to make these episodes as good as we can. And, you know...
Yeah, I mean, we're doing what we can. Hopefully next year we get a little bit better with, like, our timing, but we're...
If you have the time to take to make them as good as they are, I say keep doing it because it's quite good.
Yeah, and it also doesn't help that I have like three different freelance things going on. Like I shot a thing tonight for like a local church. It's kind of a volunteer thing, but I'm getting paid a little bit for it. But it shouldn't take that long. And I have like another like a promo video, and I also have like these website launch videos that I'm doing for another place. And it's just... Like, all that stuff, I think they're going to want some stuff this week to look at, so that's going to take up some time, too. It's just the way it's happened.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, I would love, like, I have an episode I would love to work on with John while he's here, but I'm not sure if we're going to have time. I mean, we can see what we can do, but, I mean, maybe it can be something that we could actually, like, collaborate on remotely. Later on, anyway, if they wanted to.
I'm used to doing stuff remotely anyway, so that's just, you know.
I mean, hey, we work remotely too. So.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just the way it is. And you know, like this time of year it's just tough. And I think that like last year we had the same situation where we were weekly going up until like this week, and then
how did we do it?
But our episodes this year have been a lot bigger than.
We've done some crazy episodes this year, but I mean our schedule has not been as, you know, rigorous, but that's probably been good for our sanity too. But
yeah, for a while you guys are cranking them out.
we really did that, but in retrospect
I spent there was like one episode between August and December last year where I didn't go to bed at like, well, there were three episodes that I literally didn't go to bed before going to work.
I know what you mean.
And there was maybe one where I went to bed like before 3 or 4 o'clock.
I mean,
like the day before we released it was ridiculous.
I tried to do DF retro episodes weekly for a while, And obviously, it's not always the case.
No,
I have to do all the other work too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, when it comes to videos like that, like, I mean, there's no halfway point where you're like, oh, well, this is good enough. I'm just going to release it.
Exactly. You got to finish it. So, and I've said it before, I usually have like 24 to 48 hours to do those retro episodes. That's
the amount of stuff that you do in those.
They're like, I just have to when I work on it, that's pretty much like, that's all I'm doing for that period. Yeah. It's very stressful.
It's like most of it, like you know, the visual comments that you're saying about the games, like, is it stuff that you've like pretty much known for a long time?
I've internalized a lot of stuff so far, and you know, it's and then it's just, you know, I just have to march through and quickly. I spend the first bit of time just capturing tons of footage and knowing all the stuff I want to highlight and just get all that footage ready.
Yeah,
and then just like line it all up in Premiere and kind of like do a lot of shot selection.
Mm-hmm.
Then I write the script, and then record the script, and I just start throwing it all in there. And just
the frustrating thing about RGB videos is that, you know, most of the footage is like from early in the game.
I know.
You know, because you know, I would love to show other more interesting things, but it's like
it's always an issue. I just
don't have time to play this whole game right now. I mean, sometimes, obviously, you know, we might load up a game that, you know, we have a save file at the end game, and, you know, that's always nice when we can show something mid-game or end-game. Or,
yeah.
You know, I made a special effort for the Game Boy episode. I really wanted the ending of Super Mario Land.
I know, I'm glad you did that. That's great.
I know, I'm not going to be happy if I don't do this. And it took me 25 minutes to get to the end of the game. So I was like, this was worth it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Austin, you know sorry, really quick. I see that this Mouthing Game Amber used a Raspberry Pi. I'm getting a Raspberry Pi from a family member for Christmas. So I think you could probably expect to see it play a little bit more prominent role in some episodes, just because I know that they're cheap. I know they're cheap, and I just never had gotten one. And my wife's sister was like, oh, I need like a $50 present for you. What do you want? I was like, oh, you know, I could get me a Raspberry Pi because I could actually use that for something.
Yeah. And we got to see one a little bit. The 8-bit Duke has one, and he demoed it for us when I was visiting Corey in October, and yeah, I mean, it seems like a fun little thing to use, and it'll be good for us to be a little more knowledgeable about it. I think there was actually a comment that I responded to today that you know, I said, you know, Corey's actually going to be getting one soon. He said, would you consider doing a whole episode on? I said, well, you know,
I think it's something we could probably throw around. I think that, you know, it's one of those things that I think that we should just do an episode on it to show that, you know, that we appreciate it and that we, you know, it's kind of like how we felt like we needed to do the CRT episode because there were so many people saying like, oh, just play on a CRT.
Now, the other big emulation thing that I really want to make a point to do, like basically the day that the Nintendo Switch comes out.
Oh yeah.
Assuming there are virtual console available from day one, I want to begin basically from day one. I want to start preparing a Nintendo Switch virtual console video.
Yeah.
Basically the state of virtual console at Nintendo Switch launch.
Blind Reflex,
what that's going to be.
Blind Reflex is asking what the best system to have a flash cart for. In my opinion, I think that the Genesis is probably the best one because you get so much out of it at this point. Yeah. You know, you can get Master System games out of it, Genesis games. And there's a lot of really interesting like ROM hacks for the Genesis. Like, I really like the palette tweaks.
Yeah, that's like awesome.
So you know, you get 32X games out of it if you have one of those. I think you get the most value out of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have a Sega CD, you can use the new one. The new ones can even be used as a backup RAM cart.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Necessary.
Yeah. I mean, the Mega Everdrive was the first one that I bought, and I got a ton of use out of it.
Nice.
For those, I don't know if anybody in the chat is going to MAGFest this year. We will be at MAGFest. We applied for a panel and we did not get it. We got a confirmation that we did not get a panel this year. So, no panel for us.
That's not right, man.
it's a bummer, but you know what? It is what it is. But if you are going to MAGFest, I think that we're big enough now that we're thinking about maybe having a get together, like a little thing where we can just like hang out. I pitched the idea to. We'll find time to do it, and we will be participating in the Half Empty E-Tank Mega Manathon. We're going to be somehow trying to play through all the way through Mega Man 3, which Tri says it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I'm kind of scared of it.
It's the hardest NES one.
Yeah.
Except for like the final part of the boss rush of Mega Man 1, because Fireman is a jerk.
Yeah.
Well, we might do a bonus stream eventually here of us just like practicing. So look for that.
It's the hardest NES Mega Man, but it's like with like two practice runs, we'll be able to beat an hour. I guarantee it. You know, we just need to have the boss order down. We need to pick a good starter. I want to think Magnet Man is pretty easy, but I could be wrong.
I think pretty doable.
But right now the tentative time for us to go on that stream is like Saturday. It's a Saturday the 7th at 11 a.m.
I'm surprised it's Saturday.
Yeah, well, you know, Mega Man 3 is a big one. It's a big deal. It's got to be front and center. It's not gonna be like 10 o'clock at night, like the last one.
Right, but I assumed they did them in order.
No, they're completely out of order. And we also will be playing. I believe we'll be participating in Rock Board with Game Dave, my friend Game Dave.
Oh, yeah, Game Dave.
I'm very excited about that.
And I think that we're going to be playing it with him and maybe Ryan Stout from Ryan's Video Game Corner. If you've never seen that channel, it's a treat. It's so bizarre.
It's indescribable.
Yeah, he's pretty much a guy. He does like motion graphics and stuff for a living, and he pretty much just uses every episode to kind of teach himself like new motion graphic stuff.
Nice.
So it's just. That's pretty bizarre. So I think I don't know when that's going to be.
But that's going to be hilarious. Playing Rock Board with those guys is going to be really, really funny.
I never played it. I don't even know what to expect.
It's fun. I have it.
But I guess that's that's the current events. It's just okay. Give everybody like a big rum rush catch up of everything. So Wednesday night we'll see you back here. It might be a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
It might not be. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, just let me know.
Yeah, I mean, we can start whenever. But yeah, Symphony Night, Saturn, and
PS1.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be an interesting.
It should be a lot of fun.
Interesting thing to do.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a unique thing that I bet just never been done, at least on YouTube gaming. Like it's never never been played live side by side.
Yep.
It's gonna be pretty sweet.
Yeah. Hopefully, I don't have any issues, but I don't think I should.
We'll see.
Is that gonna do it?
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. See you on Wednesday night.
See you later.